Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big decisions ahead for the Democrats in the wake of hard losses. The presidency gone. Shut down in Congress. State houses, Republican red. Tomorrow, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi will see if she keeps her job. She likely will. But Ohio's Tim Ryan has made a good run at it, calling for change. And who will lead the DNC, the Democratic National Committee? Will it be black, progressive, Muslim Keith Ellison of Minnesota? This hour on Point, the future leadership of the Democratic Party. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What's the message needed now from the Democratic leadership and who should deliver it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Out of Youngstown, Ohio, where Trump made a strong showing, Donald Trump, after Obama took it last time out, comes Tim Ryan, congressman there, and he's been laying out his case for why he should be the minority leader in the House. Here he was last week on the PBS NewsHour.
We have not focused on the economic issues that are so important to people in working class places like Youngstown, Ohio. I mean, you look at what happened on election night. Our economic message clearly isn't penetrating. I think we need to be focused on these folks who live in areas like mine, where the median household income is $57,000 a year, which means a husband and wife are working and each making under 30 grand. They don't see the Democratic Party as home for them.
And that's a big deal. Nancy Pelosi hanging tough. Here she was saying she's got the support of her caucus as the vote looms tomorrow.
Let me just say that, as I said, without even asking anybody for a vote, I have over two-thirds of the caucus supporting me. When it's a funny thing in a caucus or any place, when somebody challenges you, your supporters turn out.
And then there's the DNC. Let's dive into all this. Joining me now via Skype from Cannon Beach, Oregon, is Reed Wilson, national political correspondent for The Hill. Reed, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm well. So the Democrats put their vote off. It's coming up tomorrow. Tim Ryan has made a good run at it. Looks like a long shot run at this hour. How's it breaking down, Reed?
I think that's long shot is probably right. Nancy Pelosi has been atop the House Democratic Caucus for almost a decade now, and she more than a decade rather, and she has essentially got not only the votes in her corner, but also the elements of a Democratic leader. I mean, she's raised literally hundreds of millions of dollars for the party. That's something that is going to be terribly difficult to replace whenever she does step aside, whether it's because she loses or because she decides to retire a few years down the road. And that is something that members notice. Now, they have not had the success that they need when they're running for election. Obviously, the Democrats have a deep minority in the House of Representatives, and you mentioned where they are in minorities around the rest of the country. But the fact is, money runs political campaigns, and Nancy Pelosi is the proven fundraiser. I think she's being rewarded for that with the loyalty of her caucus.
Reed, remind us of what the hopes were among the Democrats in the 2016 election versus the reality of what has turned out and where they stand now. Give us the profile in Washington and nationally.
So we'll start with the U.S. Senate. Democrats went into the election with 46 Senate seats. They saw a path to the 51 they needed to claim an outright majority in the U.S. Senate. They came up short, though. They only picked up two Republican-held seats. So now in the next Senate, there will be 52 Republicans, 46 Democrats and two independents. Bernie Sanders is one of those two independents. Both of those independents caucus with the Democrats, so it's really 52-48. In the House of Representatives, Democrats started with 188 seats. You need 218 for a majority. Getting back 30 seats was always going to be difficult, and there was a brief moment when Donald Trump's polls really cratered that Democrats thought they might have a shot at the majority. That was a pretty fleeting moment, though, and Democrats only picked up a handful of seats, so they will remain in a pretty significant minority. Around the country, Republicans actually picked up governorships in a couple of key states, including places like Missouri and Vermont, even as Hillary Clinton won Vermont by a huge huge margin. And then in state houses across the country, you know, Democrats actually picked up one legislative chamber. But the fact is there are 98 partisan legislative chambers in the country. One is a nonpartisan unicameral legislature. Of those 98 chambers, Republicans control 66 of them. That's near an all-time high. In practice, they control 67 of the 99 legislative chambers around the country. That just tells you that the Democratic bench, as President Obama leaves office, is near its nadir. It is near a low ebb, and the party has a lot of rebuilding to do.
And then there's the DNC as well. Here was Nancy Pelosi a couple of weeks ago saying she's fought back before, won back majorities, and she can do it again.
In 2005 and 2006, I orchestrated the take back of the House of Representatives. I'm very, very proud of that. And as I said, we see that as an opportunity now.
But here's Tim Ryan of Ohio, working man's guy, working person's guy, he says, talking with Meet the Press on Sunday, says we're not even a national party anymore, the Democrats.
Now we're not even a national party. We're a coastal party. And we got to move forward. If we're not going to get voters in Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, go back down south. When I first got in Congress, we had members from Tennessee. We got to go back there and campaign and get those folks back in the fold.
Reed Wilson, what's the argument that Tim Ryan is making as he has put his case to fellow members of the House of Representatives, Democrats, the Democrat caucus?
You know, he's making the same argument that Senator Mitch McConnell made to Republicans in the wake of President Obama's election back in 2008. I remember McConnell saying almost exactly the same thing. He said at a meeting of the Republican National Committee when they were deciding on their next chairman, he said, "I didn't sign up to be a member of a regional party." And that's effectively what Tim Ryan is saying. Look, Democrats, a significant portion of the House Democratic caucus comes from California, Illinois, and New York. That's not good. That's not the healthy sign for a party that, as Tim Ryan said, used to have, you know, a significant number of members in states like Tennessee and Alabama and Mississippi. We are becoming a much more politically homogenous country in that we've got Democrats living next to Democrats, Republicans living next to Republicans, and the two sides not exactly intermingling. You see that geographically, especially when you look at a map of where Democrats and Republicans represent in the U.S. House of Representatives. The fact is, Democrats tend to represent much smaller geographically districts in urban areas, and Republicans tend to represent much more suburban and rural areas. So by landmass, the Republicans represent something like 85 or 90% of America, but of course that's not,
acres don't vote.
Yeah. Exactly.
Though they kind of do in the Senate, I guess you might say, just because of the way things are laid out. I mean, she hasn't had a leadership challenge since 2010 when they had their disastrous showing then, lost 63 seats and the majority, the biggest loss of any party in the House since the Great Depression. Washington Post quoting Tim Ryan saying, "This is not fun anymore. It's not fun to wallow in the minority." But it's all about money. It's all about campaign money that's keeping people in line behind Pelosi. Or do they believe that she can orchestrate a comeback?
Well, there's a good question there. How much power does a House Democratic leader really have, or a House minority leader of either party really have? I mean, does any voter in, whether it's, you know, Tim Ryan's district in northeastern Ohio or Nancy Pelosi's district in San Francisco, does any voter really say, "Oh, well, I'm going to vote for the Democratic candidate because, you know, Nancy Pelosi is the Democratic leader"? Or are they making their decisions based on the much bigger issues that Tim Ryan touched on, like economic justice?
But messages and the way a party is understood, those originate all over the place, not least among the leadership in Congress, whether it's majority or minority.
Yeah, and that's true, especially now that Democrats have so few positions of power. A position like Democratic leader becomes more important. Then again, in the trade-off, if Democrats pick Tim Ryan, is that they will lose somebody who has access to the donors who have essentially funded the party for the last 20 years or so. Remember, the last race that Nancy Pelosi lost was actually a race for DNC chairman back in the 1980s. She had been a longtime party mm-hmm. activist and big donor, someone who has built those relationships with the donors for, you know, decades.
And then there's the DNC, where Debbie Wasserman Schultz ran into such a buzzsaw during the election. Donna Brazile stepped in, but then that got tricky with CNN. Keith Ellison's name put forward, congressman out of Minnesota, first Muslim congressman in American history. And here's a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders. Here's Bernie Sanders telling CNN on Sunday that he endorses Keith Ellison for chair of the Democratic National Committee.
Essentially, what we need to do right now is to become a grassroots party, which is what Keith Ellison believes. Open the doors to working people. Open the doors to young people. Less emphasis on raising large sums of money. More emphasis on bringing new blood into the political party.
Reed Wilson with the Hill. What does the fight for the DNC chair look like?
Well, there are four candidates at the moment. Keith Ellison, the congressman from Minnesota, Howard Dean, the former governor of Vermont, who had been chairman in the past, and then two state party chairmen who are running. South Carolina State Democratic Party chairman Jamie Harrison has gotten in the race already. And in New Hampshire, the chairman Ray Buckley is going to announce his candidacy today. Buckley is sort of one to watch on the insider side. He is the head of the Association of State Democratic Chairs, which may sound like a sort of insider title because it is. This is ultimately a decision that will be made by the 447 DNC members. And having covered these sort of internal party fights for a while, don't underestimate the power of somebody who has built a relationship with other members on the inside for, you know, several years. Somebody like a Keith Ellison will be a big name who can get on CNN, but somebody like a Jamie Harrison or a Ray Buckley knows these members better, and those are the members who are actually voting.
But so what's the health and power of the DNC now, Reed?
It is weaker than it has been in the past. And Howard Dean took over the DNC and built what he called the 50-state strategy. He put staffers in states all around the country. And that was really the epitome of the DNC's grassroots efforts that year. Under President Obama, the committee has really atrophied. And it's sort of atrophied because the White House itself has not placed as much of an emphasis on building the party as the previous White Houses have. President Obama preferred to do a lot of his political work in-house. But that being said, it's an organization that's pretty weak at the moment, and that's not a good thing for Democrats.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Democrats' big leadership questions in Congress, at the DNC. Who will lead after defeat? The old guard or new blood pushing to recapture the working class vote? Why didn't President Obama's popularity trickle down to state houses and to Congress? What about Tim Ryan's working class appeal? Is that the necessary focus for Democrats now? Do you want to see Keith Ellison at the DNC, black, progressive, Muslim, or Howard Dean with his 50-state strategy? Somebody else? And how large a role should Bernie Sanders now play? Reed Wilson has been with us. He's national political correspondent for The Hill, joining us today from Cannon Beach in Oregon. Simone Sanders and Jamal Simmons joined us in just a moment. Join us. Quick call first. David in Hartsville, Tennessee. David, what do you see? What do you think?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. My advice to the Democrats, and I'm one of them, is that we shouldn't panic over the situation. Obviously, the world is going more progressive. We can see that with the approval of marijuana all over. And I think that the Democrats have got to deliver their message, and maybe a little obstructionist on their part may bring home the point. They've been trying to get people paid fairly for years, and now that is being taken over by the Republicans, which is ridiculous. You know, it's our plan, and I'm really concerned with an independent, i.e. Bernie, being the leader in the Democratic Party.
But listen, David, you say the world is more progressive, but look at the outcome. It doesn't look that way by the way the new office holders will be pointed.
Well, you got a good point. However, I think that it's been hijacked. I think there are some people wishing and hoping, and it will never happen. Trickle down is not going to happen, and it never has in my lifetime of 70-plus years, and I don't think it's going to happen in the future. And we will see that within a few months or years, and then the Democrats have the position to go forward. They just have to properly use the press and deliver their message, which is right.
David, I appreciate your call, and I'm sure many Democrats hope you're right. The vote result right now, not comfortable for a whole lot of Democrats. Reed Wilson, please stand by there in Oregon. Let me welcome also into our conversation right here Simone Sanders. She's former national press secretary for the Senator Bernie Sanders presidential campaign, now a CNN political commentator. Simone, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And from Washington, Jamal Simmons is here, Democratic strategist. He was a DNC communications guy with the 08 Obama-Biden presidential campaign. He's a principal at the Raven Group, Democratic political consulting outfit. Jamal, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Our caller says, "Do not." He's a Democrat. Do not panic, Democrats. But look at the numbers. Isn't it time to ring some bells?
Well, here's where I think David is right. If you look at the national electorate, Hillary Clinton won a plurality of the votes in this election. Obviously, she lost the White House because those votes were not in the places they needed to be. At the same time, we look at polling around some of the social issues, and people tend to agree with us. Here's where I think David's wrong. Democrats have to do a better job of talking to all of Americans about, well, I guess David sort of got at this, but about our economic strategy and giving us a vision, giving the country a vision for the future about where we're going to go. You didn't hear anybody talk about entrepreneurship in this election. You didn't hear anybody talk about the number of people who are now transitioning to working for themselves or working for a company like Uber or Airbnb. We didn't have any of that conversation about the real challenges that Americans are facing. And until we do that as a Democratic Party, of course, voters will continue to look for other options.
Simone Sanders, can Nancy Pelosi deliver that message to the Congress, to the country?
She might be able to. Look, I think the House leadership fight on the Democratic side is the House leadership fight on the Democratic side in the House. And I do think Nancy Pelosi will pull that out. I think the larger conversation, the conversation that voters across the country care about and Democrats across the country care about, is where is the party as a whole going? And that's when we start to talk about the DNC chair. That's when we also start to talk about who is representative in the building of the DNC, who the vice chairs are. But then how do we build this bench? You know, what did we do in 2017 and 2018? Look, in 2017, there will be, I think, state across the country, there is one young man. I think his name is Justin Fairfax. He's running in Virginia, and he will be the only African-American running statewide in 2017. What are we doing to coalesce around Justin Fairfax and make sure he is the lieutenant governor of Virginia? Those are the kind of conversations the Democratic Party needs to be having.
But let me be very blunt with you. You were in the Sanders campaign. Should it be Nancy Pelosi as the minority leader for the Democrats in the House in this next go-round, Simone?
Look, I think that is up for the House leadership to decide. Here's the thing, Tom. So, yes, I think we need fresh ideas. I think Democrats all across the board, from the Senate to the House to all the way to the DNC, they need a jolt. We need room to let new ideas, new people come to the table. And to be frank, Nancy Pelosi has decentralized power in an effort to stave off, Tim Ryan usurping her and getting her seat. So I think she's realized that and done some of that work. Also, what we're not talking about is on Wednesday, a woman of color will be elected to House leadership. We just don't know which one. It'll either be Linda Sanchez or it'll be Karen Bass. So these are the conversations that I think we need to be having. Look, I think Tim Ryan has some really good ideas, but Democrats in the House particularly, they do value loyalty and they also value seniority. And Nancy Pelosi has made seniority a top priority of hers, and that has allowed a lot of members, particularly members of color, like members of the CBC, to gain very coveted positions as ranking members of very important committees.
The Congressional Black Caucus, of course, you bring up gender and race very quickly there. And interestingly, Tim Ryan has pushed back some against that. Of course, Bernie Sanders has as well. Here was Tim Ryan, who's challenging Nancy Pelosi. This was Meet the Press on Sunday, saying the Democratic Party's identity politics strategy not working.
We try to slice the electorate up, and we try to say, you know, you're black, you're brown, you're gay, you're straight, you're a woman, you're a man. The reality of it is there's no juice in that kind of campaign. There's no energy in that because it's divided.
Tim Ryan, here's a white guy from Ohio who says so. What do you think? No juice in that kind of campaign. Is Hillary the proof of the pudding?
So, go ahead, Jamal.
If I could just jump in here on this one. What I don't want to see. So here's where Tim Ryan you know, may have a point, which is that we need to have a message that is cross-cutting, that goes across geography, goes across demographics. But what I don't want us to do is to trade what he calls identity politics of black and brown and gay and women for identity politics of white males, right? And okay. So we are always, as a political entity or a political party, thinking about, you know, who likes this idea, who likes that idea, who, what's the issue of this community or that community? Let's figure it out. But we can't, you know, we can't decide that black and brown and gay and women and all the other groups of people who make up the American mosaic are no longer to be talked to because we only need to talk to white males who live in working class communities across the country.
Is anybody suggesting
how we talk
that?
To all of them?
That is in essence what people are saying when they're saying we can't participate in identity politics. We have to get back to the working class vote. I want to remind folks that working class people are also women. They are black. They are Latino. Yep. They are Native American. They are Asian American. But because the rhetoric, if you will, in throughout the general election and now post-election has been, oh, we have to move from identity politics and really win working class people. Working class people right now is code language for white working class people. And that doesn't work for the party either. So mm-hmm. I think people have to realize, I think one of the things we can take from Secretary Clinton's campaign is that we are stronger together. And working class people in McDowell County, West Virginia, are struggling with the same issues that working class folks in Chicago, Illinois are struggling with. Now, they might have different surroundings and circumstances, but they're same and similar issues. They might feel different because of the rhetoric, but they are in fact the same. So we have to get people to a place where we realize that, you know, everybody cares about jobs. Jobs is not a white people issue or a black people issue. It is an everybody issue. You know, the economy, climate change is an everybody issue. Yeah. And those are the things that Democrats care
about. And Tom, really quickly, let's just remember about the math here. Democrats have only won the majority of the national vote, a pure 50% plus one majority of the national vote, two times since 1976. And that was when a coalition of African-American, Latino, young whites, labor union members, a bunch of the Democratic Party showed up and showed out in a very big mass movement way. Hillary Clinton did not invest the same money, time, attention, messaging, strategy to appeal to that mosaic, and she ended up losing. Yes, there was a movement of white voters. It's interesting. The black man got more votes than the white woman in that particular campaign,
yep.
But what really happened was you lost a lot of young African-American, white, and Latino voters to the third-party candidates because they were not inspired and trusting of the Democratic
nominee. But here we stand right now. Reed Wilson in Oregon. I mean, Tim Ryan is writing, says, not since the 1920s has a Democratic leader other than Nancy Pelosi presided over a smaller caucus, Democratic caucus, since the 1920s. How's the identity politics debate playing out, Reed? It's been hot the last couple of weeks.
Well, and I think it's interesting what Jamal and Simone have both said is that the economic concerns of a white working class person in rural West Virginia and an African American working class guy in Chicago or Los Angeles or wherever are the same, and there's a lot of, you know, political similarity there. The problem is the Democratic Party didn't speak to either of those people in this election. There was no overarching. Jamal said this earlier. There's no overarching economic message that talked about lifting people up. There, you know, Hillary Clinton talked about reducing college debt and the cost to go to college. But for a working class American, I mean, one of the things that Donald Trump tapped into is the fact that the American economy has changed, and that the manufacturing base that used to provide so many people with a reliable job for their entire careers is gone.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Tim Ryan is saying stop going by category of person. Bernie Sanders said a very similar thing. So is that a winning argument right now or not?
Well, I think that's sort of what Jamal just said, is that it doesn't matter. Well, not that it doesn't matter, but it matters less that you're talking to an African-American community or a white community than that you're talking to a working class community, broadly speaking, and that your message, whether it's Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or Nancy Pelosi or whoever runs for president in 2020, is broadly inspiring to people across those.
But values. Donald Trump kind of tilted that conversation toward white working class people, and he's going to be sitting in the White House, Reid.
Yeah, he did. And I think that what Jamal mentioned, it was Jamal who just said, a lot of the vote drop off came in places where especially young African-American voters didn't bother to show up. Look at Wayne County in Michigan, Detroit. Hillary Clinton got something like 70,000 fewer votes than President Obama did. On the other hand, by the way, I'd point out that in a lot of Hispanic dominant areas, Hillary Clinton's campaign did a lot better than President Obama's campaign. Places like Miami-Dade, Clark County in Nevada, Maricopa County in Arizona. So the Democratic coalition still exists. It's just there are a whole bunch of them who, one, either didn't vote, or two, flipped and voted for Donald Trump because they didn't trust the Democratic nominee.
Those are both pretty big deals. Let me go to Francis calling from Lancaster, Massachusetts. Francis, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. I'm a 52-year-old Hispanic, and I'm also an Uber driver.
Okay.
And I am listening to all the experts there, and with all the respect they deserve, they almost give me a headache. It's so simple. The Democratic Party needed a hero, needed a champion, and Mrs. Clinton was not it. As good as she is, as much as she's done, she is not it. It was Bernie Sanders. And what the Democratic campaign did to Bernie Sanders that ended up in the firing of the head of the campaign of the Democratic Party, that is what happened. And it changed everything, and it discouraged all those people, working class, young people that were ready to change everything in America, but they were silenced. When the Democratic Party, the campaign, allowed that to happen. And, you know, in fact, I was a Democratic, and when I heard those news, I was so disgusted. I went and changed my affiliation. I couldn't believe the Democratic Party did that.
Well, Francis, I so appreciate your call. Let us pick that up. The party needed a champion and a hero, and you hear Frances Simone saying that was Bernie Sanders. They lost her with the way the party, the DNC, handled all of that. How do you get that back? And what about leadership? Who's a hero? Who's a champion out there, either the DNC or on the Hill? Who's that going to be, post-Obama, post-Clinton? I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to run for president again.
Well, you'll have to ask Senator Sanders about that. I think what made Senator Sanders so appealing to the electorate is that regardless of whatever your issue was, Senator Sanders spoke directly to that issue, and he had a policy platform for it. That is why so many folks felt energized. And, you know, Bernie didn't have any fluff. He was literally just about the people. And that is how he was that is how he became, you know, this champion for everybody, this political revolution. And he also said it wasn't
not
about
everybody.
Him.
He didn't it's, make well, it, even with
he
them.
Didn't make it.
Panky, panky.
But we, in the general election, Secretary Clinton picked up key pieces of Senator Sanders' platform. We were still talking about economics. We were having a robust conversation about education in this country and making public colleges and universities tuition free. Those are things that Bernie Sanders championed.
Okay. We know that. We lived that. But despite the popular vote, she's not going to be in the White House. So who's the hero? Who's the champion going to be in the Democratic leadership now, Simone?
In the leadership, well, if we are talking about 2020, we don't have that person yet. But in terms of the Democratic, the chair of the DNC, I personally think we need a competent, capable, well-qualified chair of color.
Is that Keith Ellison? He's African-American. He's in the
Keith Ellison is African-American, but so is Jamie Harrison that's also running.
Yep.
There's a chance
South
that, you know, Tom Perez might get in. And we need somebody that's a party builder. So I'm not throwing my weight behind anybody just yet. I want to hear more from all of the candidates, but I am definitely pushing for a chair of color, and I'm pushing for vice chairs that are representative of the depth and breadth of the Democratic Party.
Jamal, where's your shoulder leaning, Jamal, for the DNC chair?
I don't have a candidate for the DNC chair's race. I more have principles, and I think what I would like to see is something akin to what Howard Dean did in terms of the 50-state strategy and building out across the country in a real grassroots way.
Do you want him back? Is he out just because he's white?
not the fake grassroots way the Clinton campaign did, which is heavy on data and analytics and light on people politics. We need a real grassroots way. And
What about Howard Dean then? He's put his hand up.
I'm for new blood. So here's the thing about Democrats. You asked about who's going to be the champion. Mm-hmm. If you think back, nobody expected that Jimmy Carter would be president when he ran in 1976. Nobody expected that Bill Clinton would be president 4 years before he ran in 1992. And nobody expected that Barack Obama would be president 4 years before he ran. I think we need to have some humility, an open process, let people have at it, and let's see who emerges from the grassroots and they can assemble their coalition to win.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the Democrats. Big leadership questions right now in Congress, at the DNC. Who will lead after defeat? The old guard or new blood? They're looking to recapture the working class. But what does that mean? Is it code now for white working class? Simone Sanders says that cannot be the Democratic base. Let's have everybody in there. Former National Press Secretary for Bernie Sanders. She's with us. Jamal Simmons is here from the Raven Group in Washington, Democratic political consultant there. And Reed Wilson is here from The Hill, correspondent there, national political correspondent. We've got lots of callers for all of you. Adam in Austin, Texas. Adam, thanks for calling. What's your advice?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to offer a perspective from, say, I usually identify more of as a conservative or libertarian side of the aisle. And from what I see is that the Democrats really need somebody who would be less divisive, more, you know, offer more inclusion. For example, these leaders in the House, Senate, Democrat, Republican, people used to be more cordial towards each other instead of, you know, they kind of dehumanize each other.
Less divisive than who? Who are we talking about here, Adam? Put some names on it.
I just feel like what was his name, Bonner, the last House Speaker? How he and Obama, they hardly ever talked, ever conversed with each other.
But John Boehner was a Republican, so what's that have to do with Democratic leadership?
Well, as a leader, if you're a leader of any sort, you have to talk to the opposing side.
All right.
You have to be inclusive. These people need to talk. They need to have dinner with each other.
Yeah.
And that kind of trickles down to the rest of the country. Like, it's very divisive out there.
Well, that's no doubt true, and I agree that they need to be talking. Of course, who's willing to talk to whom is a big question, and whether the Democrats now work with Republicans or hunker down, a big question as well. Adam, I'm glad you raise it. Let me hop for just a moment here, if I may, to West Palm Beach, Florida, and Congresswoman Representative Lois Frankel. She's a Democratic congresswoman representing the 21st District of Florida. She's a big supporter of Nancy Pelosi. Representative Frankel, thanks very much for being with us.
How are you today? Good to be with you.
We're okay. Listen, one of your fellow members of Congress, Kathleen Rice, is not with Pelosi. And I want to listen with you for just a moment. She's behind Tim Ryan. And she talked to CNN yesterday, and I want to get your response. Here's Representative Kathleen Rice of New York saying Nancy Pelosi has done great things, but the caucus needs a new voice now.
Tim Ryan has a very clear message. He thinks and has said that he believes the Democratic Party has become a coastal party, California and New York. And we need to be talking to people in Ohio and Michigan and Minnesota and Pennsylvania and all across the country. And that's a message that we did not have in this election. And we need to hear what the voters have said. We cannot do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result.
Representative Frankel, she says it's become a coastal party. Tim Ryan says the same thing. There you are, on the coast. So why Nancy Pelosi and not Tim Ryan?
Well, let me just say, Kathleen Rice is a friend. I have a lot of respect for her. I think a lot of what she said makes sense, but I don't agree with the result. First of all, I do think it is the message that's important. that, and listen, Bernie Sanders is a great example of that, message, which rang across the country. And, you know, the message, I was a big supporter of Hillary Clinton. She won the popular vote. So, let's not discount that. But, you know, it was the top of the ticket that directed the message. You know, I think we can do a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking and saying, yeah, the message should have been more economic driven rather than, going after Donald Trump.
But here we are, Representative. Here we are, that you won't have the White House, you won't have Congress. You know what the situation in state houses, and you're coming in behind the same leadership in the House that you've had through this. Why Nancy Pelosi after this much defeat?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we're coming in with a very erratic president-elect, a Republican Congress that is promising to do some very radical things. And I think, in my opinion, we need the most experienced tactician that we can get. And Nancy Pelosi is a proven tactician. I think the moves that she has just made in the recent weeks, which is to diversify even more our caucus. And keep in mind, we have the most diverse caucus ever in the history of this country, the majority being Black, Hispanic, women, And so,
I mean, that's great, but you don't. But you're not the majority. You don't run the House.
We don't run the House, but I think we still represent the majority of people in this country. And so, I think what we've learned from this election is that our message has to be stronger, clearer on the economic front. But listen, I have been sitting in caucus meetings now for 4 years,
yep.
And I can tell you that. The number one thing we talk about all the time is people being able to make a living. And so the fact that that message did not get across in this last election, really, I think you have to look at the top of the ticket, who I love, and who got the popular vote. But with all that said, Nancy Pelosi is the most experienced leader. She has taken steps to diversify the leadership so that we can better reflect not only our caucus, but the country. And picking leaders that are not, we say, bi-coastal. And incidentally, I'm from Florida. I don't necessarily, which I consider more southern, even though I do have a little bit of a northern accent.
Yeah, but they don't call it West Palm Beach for nothing.
You cannot put Florida in the same category as California and New York. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We are a purple state. And I will tell you what, our purple state picked up 3 new congressional seats and we have Nancy Pelosi to thank for much of that success.
Representative, you've got people listening from all over the country. Let me put you in conversation with just one of them, calling from Wisconsin. Doug is calling. Doug, you're on with Representative Lois Frankel in Florida. What do you think about the Democrats and their approach, Doug?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. What I think is you guys are all missing the point. You just said that the majority of Americans voted for Democrats and Hillary Clinton. Well, that's false. And neither did a majority of Americans vote for Donald Trump and the Republican Party. The majority of Americans stayed home. And the reason why the majority of Americans stayed home is because people are angry. People want change. And they don't necessarily, yes, we all want economic change. Yes, we all want economic liberty. We all want the ability to have the same opportunity as everybody else does. But what we all need is a government that works. And right now, the polls are all saying government is broken and we want change in government.
How do you want Democrats to speak to that, Doug? How would Democrats act or speak to address that concern to you?
To me, it sounds like what we need is all this talk about money that we're talking about with Nancy Pelosi and everything.
Yeah, raising for
that
campaigns.
Needs to go. People are mad about money in politics. We can do term limits. We can do campaign finance reform. It takes our elected officials who are not listening to us right now to listen to us and understand what our anger is with government.
Doug, we've got it. Representative Frankel, you heard it right there. I mean, we heard earlier one of the things that's drawing people to Nancy Pelosi is she's a proven great fundraiser. And Doug in Wisconsin doesn't want to hear it.
Well, first of all, let me just say this. Doug, thank you for your call. And I have to say, I agree with probably 95% of what you just said. Yeah, Americans are angry. You know, Democrats are angry, too, because money has taken over politics. And listen, from day one, when President Obama was elected, the president of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, said openly and publicly that the goal of the Republicans was to stymie him in every way. And I can tell you that I have been in this Congress for the past 4 years, and I saw that. Every which way they could block President Obama, they did, with one goal. One goal was to not only stop him, but wait for a Republican president who would reverse everything that he had accomplished.
So what do you learn from that? Do you want Nancy Pelosi to do the same thing now?
We've been waiting almost a year for a Supreme Court appointment. So I agree with Doug. There needs to be more cooperation, less money in politics. I can understand why it is so frustrating for the public. So, you know, Doug, right on. And I think the public needs to keep sending that message to members of Congress. I agree.
Agree. And going with Nancy Pelosi, Representative Lois Frankel from West Palm Beach in Florida. Thank you so much for being with us today, Representative.
Hey, great to be with you.
Let's go to Jamal. Thank you very much. Let's go to Jamal in Detroit, Michigan. Jamal, you're on the air.
Hey, that's me.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, you're on.
Hi. You know what? I want everybody to hear this very clearly. When you're dealing with the public, whether it's business, whether it's politics, you have to tap into, you have to harness people's feelings. It may sound hokey, but feelings trigger actions.
Yep.
Trump touched people's feelings in a way that Hillary did not. Obama touched people's feelings in a way that his opponents did not. I'm going to be running for office next year locally. My core theme is feelings. What is it that you feel? Because that's what's going to move you. Policy is scenery. What is it that you feel? That's what you're going to vote for.
Yeah, but policy ultimately sets the structure for how things work. How do you get from feelings to a good policy, Jamal? Are you going to do it?
The way you go from feelings to a policy is by keeping the feelings in mind. Policy comes down to compromise. Policy comes down to showing that you've gotten something accomplished. Sometimes with feelings, you will capture someone just because you fight for their feelings, even if nothing got accomplished.
So who's going to do it for you at the top of the Democratic Party now, whether it's in the House or at the DNC? Will Keith Ellison deliver on that for you, Jamal?
The person that I don't have anybody right now, but the person that will deliver is the person that I will fight for. The person that makes me feel that they care about my feelings.
Jamal in Detroit, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Reed Wilson, do you see anybody out there who's going to respond to that call? Bring on the emotion stirring Democrat.
Well, yeah, I think we're probably going to see that the battle for that crown play out as people start positioning themselves for a run in 2020. You know, there were, 17 Republicans who ran in the primaries in 2016. I think you're probably going to see probably the same number of Democrats lining up to run. And they're all going to try to capture that, what Bernie Sanders captured among, especially among young voters, and what we call the rising American electorate, factions of the Democratic Party that created President Obama's winning coalition in 2008 and 2012. You know, can anybody do that? We'll see. Let's not forget, in all this talk of grabbing people's attentions and grabbing people's feelings, let's not forget that President Obama ran more negative advertising than any other presidential campaign in history against both John McCain and Mitt Romney. So there is an element of actual real politic in this that, you know, negative ads play a role. But the fact is, the next Democratic candidate will certainly have to have an economic conversation with Americans, regardless of race, better than Hillary Clinton was able to. And I think we're going to see that play out in the auditions of the 2020, sort of the invisible primary leading up to 2020.
Rich in Ware, Massachusetts. Rich, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show, but
thanks.
Spirited, but not a lot of substance.
We're trying, honestly. Rich. We're trying our best here. We're looking for it.
You're doing good, but the problem is politics is power, pure power. And these people know that. And two callers that really, the last two callers, Doug, unfortunately, doesn't understand power. If you were going to pick, if Nancy Pelosi can bring money, that's part of power.
Okay.
And we are so run out of town right now of what happened here on a 30-year decline that we need money, and that's part of the power. If she can deliver it, then stay away from anybody else who can't deliver the money. This is about rebuilding. A couple other things.
Hillary had a lot of money, and she's not going to sit in the Oval Office.
But you want to rebuild, or do you want to win? All right? If we win the presidency, all we're able to do is block. That's all Hillary would have been able to do even at this point is block. And now that's a big thing, and she would have got the Supreme Court nominations, but they would have been watered down. We need to rebuild the party, and it's going to take years to do it and a lot of money and a lot of education. People do not make the conjunction of politics and power. They want to win. They want to win quick. That will not. We've lost the center of the country because of heavy money, heavy Koch brothers money there. We've lost all these.
I don't know, Rich. Donald Trump, I don't know how much Koch brothers money he had, but I'm not sure that was his main battering ram. But I take your point. You got to have a strategy, and it's going to be a long-term fight. Jamal, how does it actually work with the DNC? When's the vote going to be, and who decides it, and when?
The Democratic National Committee chair vote is going to be the weekend of February 23rd through the 26th in Atlanta, which is the general meeting for the party.
And this is not what was expected, right? They expected a Clinton inauguration, and they'd name somebody right after that, but nope, that's not the scene.
Correct. And what happens, and here's what happens. They're going to set a bunch of rules this Friday. There's a meeting in Denver this Friday where the rules committee will meet, and they'll figure out all the rules for running for chair. That will happen. And then over the course of the next 2 months, there'll be a vigorous campaign. It'll be look an awful lot like a kind of a student government race, right?
Yeah.
It'll have all the very small kind of attributes of a small race. But let me just say this. It doesn't, as much as Nancy Pelosi, who I assume will be the leader again, and Chuck Schumer have an opinion, and Bernie Sanders has an opinion about who ought to be the next DNC chair.
Yep.
They only get one vote apiece if they're even members of the DNC, which I don't think Bernie Sanders is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to remember that when Ron Brown became chair of the DNC, he beat back a coalition led by Bill Clinton, who was then the head of the DLC. When Howard Dean ran for Democratic chair, he beat back Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid when they were leaders. So usually the person who wins that chairmanship has built their coalition outside of Washington, D.C., in New York City, in the rest of the country.
Simone, last word goes to you. Who's it going to be? Who should it be?
Again, I am supporting a chair that reflects the depth and breadth of the Democratic Party. I think we've got really great candidates in Jamie Harrison and Keith Ellison, and I look forward to hearing what they both have to say.
You mean depth and breadth? By that, you mean you want a person of color, whoever it is.
I want a person of color that's qualified, capable to do the job. But yes, we haven't had an elected person of color since Ron Brown. So it is past time for an elected chair of color of the Democratic National Committee.
And there,
let's see what Tom Perez wants to do.
Oh, yeah. And Tom Perez, he could get in.
Labor secretary could come in. A lot of popularity there, too. And there, ladies and gentlemen, is the Democratic Party, 3 weeks now after the presidential election 2016. Simone Sanders, Jamal Simmons, Reed Wilson at the Hill. Our great thanks to all three of you for being with us this hour, and callers, all of your input as well. Just terrific. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.